Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
On conservativenationmedia.com, the place where America always wins. Duke Brooks here. Chat room is open for business. 718-305-7176 is the number. And as you're aware by now, last week we had kind of a busy week. I was on the air Wednesday and on Friday. No problem. I really enjoyed it. On Wednesday, we talked with a couple of very serious experts, namely Barrett Tillman, Tom Cleaver, and John Parshall about the Battle of Midway. And on Friday, we spoke with Tom Cleaver and Barrett Tillman about the D-Day landings at Normandy, because Friday was the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings, which certainly was the greatest feat of arms in human history, in modern, warfare. I mean, just unbelievable. 156,000 guys in the period of a couple of hours getting on time. Just, amazing. And the sacrifices that they made. If you were an American and you landed at Omaha Beach or Utah Beach, you had a very tough row to hoe, as they say. But anyway, I digress. 1 week from tonight, Tom Cleaver and I believe Barrett Tillman and maybe John Parshall will be joining me here to discuss a naval battle in World War II called the Battle of the Philippine Sea, which is also known by its colloquial name, the Great Marianas Turkey Shoot. But we'll check with Facebook. Check with our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and we will that will keep you up to date on what is happening. Now then, to get you up to date on what is happening in the world, as you're aware, it's been about 10 or 12, well, maybe 12 days now since this U.S. Army private that was serving in eastern Afghanistan and who left his base 5 years ago, named Bo Bergdahl. He is now a sergeant in the Army, and he had been captured by the Taliban 5 years ago. Apparently, he left his base, and he went looking for them to make friends or to do something. I have no idea. It seems that what we're hearing about Bo Bergdahl and his dad is a very strange, they just seem to be very weird people. People who do not have any particular loyalty to this. If someone is not going to be loyal to the United States, I don't know what they're doing in the military. And, some people are calling the guy a traitor. I don't know if he is a traitor or not. There is only one crime that is defined in the United States Constitution, only one, and that is treason. Article 3, Section 3. And it says, and I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe I can kind of rattle it off. There's a couple of things. There's a few things in the U.S. Constitution, probably in the Declaration of Independence and in other major America that I think every American should have memorized. Maybe 3 squared, which is what I call Article 3, Section 3, 3 squared. Maybe that is one of them. Treason against the United States of America shall consist solely in taking up arms against them, adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. You know, basically, in order to be convicted of treason against the U.S., you have to physically shoot at Americans, okay? And you have to do so in adherence to the country's enemies, comfort to the enemy, all right? Now, I don't know about you, but I think that Jane Fonda absolutely fits at least two of those three criteria. 718-305-7176 is the number. Maybe you agree with that. Maybe you don't. If you served in Vietnam, first off, thank you for serving in Vietnam. I did not. I really literally just missed the draft by a couple of weeks. I did register, but the draft itself had ended. If I remember, in the early part of 1973, which is that summer I turned 18, so, you know, I did not have to go. If they had called me, I would have gone. Since I'm an only child, they did not call me. There is an exemption for only children, and I think I was classified as 1H or something. Anyway, I digress. I believe that Jane Fonda absolutely was a traitor, no question about it. Whether Bo Bergdahl is one or not, I don't know. I do believe that he is a deserter, and those are different. That's different from being a traitor. It may be that he is a traitor. We don't know. There are a lot of stories out about Bergdahl had been with the Taliban, speaking their language, which is called Pashtun. It sounds kind of like Indian, I don't know, you know, subcontinental Indian, I just don't know. But we really, you know, we don't know, and the Army will investigate this, but it's not, it is not what he was doing when he left. It is not where he went when he left. It is not his motivation for leaving that has so many Americans very, very displeased with what the administration has done. It is the five guys that we had to give up in order to get him back. Linda has just come in. She has a box from Boeing. I digress. It's the five guys that we had to give up in order to get him back. After that, it was the administration's kind of sort of weirdness about how, you know, how they tried to justify what they did, which almost nobody except Debbie Wasserman Schultz and even Hillary Clinton has been silent on it, as far as I know. No one has been on the administration's side on this. And, okay, here's the analogy. Let us presume it is World War II in Europe, and Eddie Slovic, Private Eddie Slovic, actually leaves his unit and does not come back. And the Germans capture him, whereas in the meantime, we had captured Erwin Rommel, Gerd von Rundstedt, we had captured Joachim Pieper, Goebbels, and Goering. And those are the five Germans that we had. And we said, look, we want Private Eddie Slovic back, and if, you know, You give us back Private Slovic, and we will give you back von Rundstedt and Rommel. You know, it's that's basically what the analogy is. Now, make no mistake about the fact that the Taliban military is not the same as the German army in World War II. That's not what I'm just saying, that the people that we gave back were of such a high level of the Taliban's, quasi-military, paramilitary command structure. And Bo Bergdahl was a person of, really no particular value other than the fact that he was an American. Look, should we have a policy that we get our people back? Yeah, we should have a policy. But the fact of the matter is, there is a price that we must not be forced to pay. It was mentioned on one of the TV networks the other day, I forget which one, that if the price had been all of the Taliban detainees at Guantanamo and $5 billion, would we have paid that price? I think the answer is no, we would not have paid that price. Frankly, I don't think that if it were me, I mean, seriously, if it were up to me, I think what I would have done is I would have brought the five Talibans to Afghanistan, told them that they were there, and said, now, where is Bo Bergdahl? Bring Bo Bergdahl, or we will not mow down these five Taliban. You bring him here right now, or we're going to shoot each one of these five guys, and we've got bullets that have pig blood inside of them. I think that that would have gotten their attention. You know, I really do. That's the world in which they live. I mean, these are, you know, we're talking about people that are basically, these tribal people that have a very, very limited level of contact with the modern world, and they are still living in basically pre-medieval superstitions. You know, that's where these folks are coming from. And why we don't exploit that and use that to our benefit, it's just unbelievable. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Duke Brooks here. We've been talking about Bo Bergdahl. We will be getting to former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor in just a moment. I did want to... Let's see here. I wanted to bring some information your way. You know, I do this pretty much all the time. Here at conservativenationmedia.com, we have been telling you for a long time that we are making some changes and we're growing, and they are already taking place. For starters, our first show of the work week, Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance, has moved to Tuesdays. Now, you're probably aware, you're certainly aware by now, that Tennessee's issues are spreading out all over the United States. And Dave Vance brings his veterans insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Tuesday, so make sure that you check him out. It's brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee's now on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. 718-305-7176 is the number here. I see our international correspondent, Christian, has arrived. That's great. Maybe Christian and I will speak about this. Christian can call in starting about, Christian, give me about a minute and a half. That will take us right up to 15 minutes after the hour. And after that, I've got some, actually have a Danish story that I wanted to run past you, buddy. Anyway, I suppose the major issue with Bo Bergdahl is the price that we had to pay to get him back. Five senior Taliban political and paramilitary and military commanders. These are literally, they are cave dwellers, and they are kind of Stone Age people. The Taliban, remember, are the group of very serious radical Mohammedans that when they took over Afghanistan after the Soviet Union left, they were doing things like they were bringing women to a soccer stadium and they were executing the women in public because the women had had one of them had had an affair with somebody. Yeah, I mean, these are ridiculously and absurdly brutal people. And we gave five of them back to get back this guy from Idaho, Bo Bergdahl. Anyway, we are going to take a brief break now. Your calls, our international correspondent Christian, all that coming up, and Eric Cantor and all kinds of other good things. So stay right where you are.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You've got to try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Welcome back. The Mighty Electric Light Orchestra, Above the Clouds, right here on Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And, Christian can give me a call now if he wants to. The number is 718-305-7176. If you're using Skype, there is another way to get us. And, I think you just call in. There, Blog Talk Radio has a new feature, which I like. It's called Zingaya, and it works like Skype, and all we have to do when we're hosting a program on the network is just push a button. It dials automatically, and a moment later, you begin hearing the British lady saying, your show is scheduled to begin in 3 minutes, 40 seconds, that kind of thing. So anyway, that's, you know, gradually I think that there are improvements taking place on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm glad about that. There are some people that still, you know, I've got a buddy that I say to him often, why don't you come on the air with us instead of doing what you're doing, where you're doing? He said, well, you guys are still on Blog Talk. Oh, that's right, Private Pile. Yeah, we're still on Blog Talk. Blog Talk's getting better all the time. They're not paying me to say this, but Blog Talk is getting better all the time. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. You know, there's a phrase out there. The phrase is peace at any price. And this is something, it seems to me, that the left kind of likes this idea. They like the idea of peace, and a lot of them are willing to pay any price to have it. In this particular case, I believe the phrase might be deserting sergeants at any price. Giving away the five most senior Taliban people that we had, and under circumstances, they're going to the Persian Gulf Emirate of Qatar, or Qatar, as some people, maybe that's appropriate, I don't know. And they, you know, at first, Obama and his friends were telling us that they would be they would be kind of on a short leash over there, and that we, the United States, would be keeping an eye on them. And then later that same day, the government of Qatar came out and said, no, they're going to be able to go anywhere that they want to in our country, and we're not aware of anything that the Americans are going to be able to do to, you know, to keep an eye on them. And so, you know, it seems every time our administration, our president, any of those folks do anything, we look like idiots. Now, we have certain people in the intelligence community that are saying releasing those five guys is a very serious problem. It has the potential to basically, you know, they are going to attack Americans. And on top of that, a day or so later, we had a Taliban guy already in Afghanistan that said, well, you know, now that we know that we can exchange an American for our people in Guantanamo Bay, we're going to try to capture as many Americans as we can. Oh, well, you know, and then John Kerry's response to that, he said, oh, baloney. John Kerry ought to go back to his day job as an Easter Island statue. As far as I know, that guy has been wrong about everything. He just does not, you know, the guy has absolutely no decent judgment whatsoever. None. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. We have been talking a little bit about Bo Bergdahl. He is in Germany. I did see something earlier today. You know, even though you're not supposed to put anything on the internet that isn't true, it's kind of like you're not supposed to say anything that isn't true or print anything that isn't true. I saw a story that said that Bo Bergdahl had chartered an airplane and taken back to Afghanistan. I don't think so. I don't think so. My guess is that Sergeant Bergdahl right now is under arrest at, I believe, the Landstuhl Air Force Base in Germany or the Rhein-Main Air Force Base in Germany, one of the two. There's a huge American military complex there. Has been since the end of the war. Probably always will be, you know? Probably always will be. I remember when Germany reunited, which I think was around 1989. The phrase going around was, I liked Germany so much, I was glad that there were two of them, you know. Not really sure that we can trust the Germans. Christian, what do you think? You think the Germans are trustworthy now? What do you think?
It's very difficult to say what's really going on in Germany these days, these years, actually, since they got this Angela Merkel, because what she's really basically doing is she's giving tons of money away to the European Union, and she's taking money away from the German people, and for some odd reason they seem to accept it. The German people has been taught by the media that they don't really have a nation that they should be proud of and that should be able to defend, because whenever nationalistic standpoints and viewpoints have been mentioned in the debate in Germany, they have been labeled as Nazis, and of course Germany has a bit of a history with the Nazis.
A little bit.
So the Nazi card in Germany is not a card you want to have raised against you. So they have banned several nationalistic movements there. So Germany is really like a weird country to figure out. But basically, the German people, they are trustworthy. The German people is a proud people, and probably, you know, probably the best people in Europe, for that matter. They're very successful at what they do always, and a hard-working, good people, really.
Yes. Now, are you hearing over there in Denmark, are you hearing people or media or anyone basically laughing at the United States and saying, how could those people be so stupid? Are you hearing anything like that?
No, but there is being raised that there are problems with the deal, but you see we had just had an election to the European Parliament, so that has been filling the media a lot, and then there's been, you know, like a local issues in the different countries. We have had some local political things in Denmark that have been covering, and then it's basically like a gone summer, and then also there is the World Cup coming up, you know, so the media cycle has been full with a lot of these things, and of course you always kind of, you know, be aware of that the European media, and especially like the Danish media that I know, they don't want to, you know, bring stories to attention where Obama looks good, looks bad. So, of course, they're not talking that much about this dreadful deal that he made.
No, it's pretty interesting and really kind of amazing how people in media will go so far out of their way to defend Obama. It is crazy.
Yeah, but you know, you got to really, you got to take into consideration with the media situation anyway that that these media people, they help them get elected. So if they had to all of a sudden start being, you know, saying, oh, he was a bad president, then people would start saying, well, you told us to elect him. So what's up with that? So
that's right.
So you know, they can't be too harsh on him, because then they would basically be telling us, we didn't know what the hell we were saying, you know, when we told you guys that he was a great guy and he was the one to elect. So they're kind of
exactly
covering
right.
covering their own behinds, so to speak.
About
this deal,
I think you're right
you
now. Let's say again. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christian.
Okay, cool. I was just thinking, you know, I was listening to your show earlier, and you told how you would have handled the situation with the hostage and the Bergdahl guy and all that. And I think basically, I know it sounds very cynical and hard, but I would basically say that anyone being captured should be tried, you know, to be really, to be freed and all that. But I would never negotiate with them, and I would never, you know, make any sort of deal. Not even, you know, if they ended up, you know, just to get something. Let's say, we release them if you give us a beer. Just give us a beer. just give us a Budweiser beer, then you can have them. You know, not even that, because it's about, you know, teaching them that that they gain nothing from kidnapping or taking any of our people hostage. Because what he has basically done is he has brought the lives of the American people all around the globe in danger. Because what Obama has done is he has told the Taliban guys that it pays to kidnap Americans.
That is exactly what it does. And that is something that Obama and Kerry and their friends in Washington, D.C. simply do not have the ability and the capacity to recognize. For some reason, they just can't. I don't know why. Christian, hang on a second. I want to take a break.
Sure.
But when we come back, I want to ask you about a news story that came to me today. So just stay there for a moment.
Sure.
All righty. Now, just when you think you've heard everything, those left-wingers in D.C. pull something else. And they're going to keep on doing it until we, the people, run them out of town on a rail. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn your entire world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure that you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear you'll need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. More with our international correspondent direct from Denmark, Christian, your calls, and Bo Bergdahl and Eric Cantor. All that's coming up, so stay right where you are.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on The Michael Behrman Show. Right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change? You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Hi, welcome back. This is Radio Free America now on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here. The number is 718-305-7176. We have a lot to talk about. Our international correspondent, Christian, from the Kingdom of Denmark, is with us. Christian, this story came across the wire today. It says that Denmark has passed a law that will force churches to participate in gay wedding ceremonies. The country's parliament voted through the new law on same-sex marriage by a large majority, making it mandatory for all churches to conduct gay marriages. Carsten Nissen, the Bishop of Viborg, who is refusing to carry out the ceremonies, has warned that the new law risks, quote, splitting the church, unquote. Is that true?
As far as I've heard, that it is the thing is that they've made it so that it's up to the every church has to, in principle, perform gay marriage, but it's up to the priest himself if you want to participate in it. But you know, like we have a local church here; it's called Grøndalslund Church. It's our local church. And if let's say that if I was gay, you know, which I'm not in any way, thank God. But if I wanted to be gay married, but if I wanted to be gay married in that church, it would be my right to. But the local priest would not be forced to do the ceremony. Then they would have to, you know, like get some other priest that would. But it would be held in that church. That is basically...
Is it a Lutheran church?
What?
Is it a Lutheran church? Lutheran?
I think that all the churches, the Danish public churches, are Lutheran. We are Protestants, anyway.
Yes,
I know that.
Right. Although there are...
I must admit that I'm not a member. I'm not a member of the Danish Church.
You're not? How come?
You know, I must say that I'm in a lot of ways really been raised atheist, really. But I've come to be what I would call, and I've always really been like that, a cultural Christian. I believe in the Christian way of living. I'm not so sure about the God thing, to be honest. But I'm a strong believer in the spirit of the church and in the values of the church. A really strong believer and a staunch supporter of it. So that's really why. Yes.
Well, that's, you know, of course, we live,
yes.
You and I both live in Western civilization, and one of the hallmarks of Western civilization is the idea that your religion is up to you as long as you don't try to impose it on other people. And if you want to believe in God, you can. If you don't want to, that's up to you as well. This is something that the Mohammedans obviously simply
believe. They don't have it like that. But what I would also like to say is that a few years back, 3 or 4 years back, I was really considering, you know, becoming a full-blown member. But then they started all this gay marriage business, and then I lost interest because the Danish church is a state church, you know, it's financed and in largely run by the state, and it makes it so that it's very, you know, loose church, which has really no values at all. They're loose, weak, both on gay marriage and on abortion, and on the cultural battle that are between the Muslims and the Christians. Many Danish priests are the leading supporters of more immigration from Muslim countries. They are held having services where Muslims attend and where imams attend, and they are very, you know, you hardly ever hear a Danish priest speaking out against abortion and gay marriage. There are some, and they are doing a good job, but I must say that most of them are not really fighting for Christianity. You know, Liberty University, they have a very beautiful motto called, say they educate champions of Christ. And I must say there are very few champions of Christ in the Danish church, sadly. But there is a large growing underground of churches where there are private churches, and they are strong believers in the Bible and the Word of God, really. And I'm starting to check into those.
Are there any Catholic churches in Denmark?
Yeah, but it's a very small group. But it's very, very small, you know. In fact, most things don't really let much into religion.
Sure, that goes back through the history of the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation. And, you know, I think most people understand that there are, for instance, if you are in Northern Europe, it is almost entirely Protestant. If you are in Southern Europe, including places like Bavaria in Germany, it is still Catholic. Italy is Catholic. France is almost entirely Catholic, except for the Mohammedans, obviously, you know.
Yeah, and they have become
a
large group. Yeah, a very serious problem. And I really think that a lot of Christian people over here in Europe they don't understand how huge the Muslim problem really is, and they are very weak. And many of them are really helping the Muslims to, you know, like building their power base in Europe, and that's sort of sad to see. I must say,
it really is. It really is. And you know, we have obviously freedom of religion is specified in the United States Constitution, but I think one of the reasons that it was is that when our founding fathers and James Madison, who was pretty much the Madison and Adams were the leading authors of the U.S. Constitution. When they thought of religion, they were thinking of Western religions, which are Judaism and Christianity. And in America at the time, I would guess less than 0.1% of the people here were Jewish. But the point of the matter is the idea that one day there would be millions of Mohammedans in this country whose entire agenda is to destroy all other religions. This never occurred to people like George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and Thomas Jefferson.
No, they just didn't occur to them. But I've
they did not, and they could not, you know.
Yeah. But I have interesting news about that from Europe, if you want to hear it.
Okay, sure.
The thing is that we had this European Parliament election, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and it was actually quite a shocker of an election, because in many of the countries they have nationalistic party getting on the ballot and such, and most of those really got up to a third of all the votes. So it was a great victory for the nationalistic movement in all of Europe. That election, between 25 and 35% of all the votes went to parties that ran on an anti-EU, on a back to basics, on a respect for the nation's borders. Policy and that was very, very it was very refreshing, and it was like there is some hope over here, because it seems like the people in France, in Denmark, in Italy, and in England are really are waking up, and also in the Eastern European countries, there are countries like in Greece and Hungary, where they're also saying that, you know, we want our own countries. So and a lot of these people are culturally, and that's very important that your listeners know that they are not these Nazis that some of the media are calling them and are making them out to be. They are actually, if you look at what their opinions are and about a lot of things, I think that they would find good friends in the Tea Party movement. Actually, they are everyday people that feel that the elite is going against them.
Yes, that's right.
And they want, you know, they want Christian values. They want back to basic values. And so Europe, the nationalistic cultural conservative movement is really on a rise over here in Europe. So that's very hopeful, actually.
I hope so. I really do. Christian, I've got to go, but thank you so much for calling in, my friend, and I hope to speak with you again next Wednesday.
Yeah, and good luck with the no smoking thing. Good luck with that. I really respect that.
Well,
it's hell.
Well,
you know,
I appreciate that
stuff.
Christian, and you know it has been 5 days since I've had one, but I'm realizing that during those five
I'm
days,
for
the
it.
Only thing that I've been able to think about is how much I want a cigarette. That's about it. But anyway,
well,
thank you,
my friend.
I appreciate that.
God bless
you. And I will talk to you again very soon, and to you as well. Have a great day, sir. God bless you, and may God save the Kingdom of Denmark. Absolutely. Now then, as you are aware, conservativenationmedia.com is growing, and we have, of course, expanded our lineup, and we have given our very own Bing Fisher his very own personal radio show. Uncle Bing brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, right after the Michael Berryman Show on conservativenationmedia.com. So stick with us since we are making some big changes and we are just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And we're going to take a quick break right now. More of your calls and some discussion of Eric Cantor coming up, so don't go away.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
This is Annie Lennox of Eurythmics, or RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive if someone else has been drinking. Thank you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets make super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on ConservativeNationRadio.org.
All righty, welcome back to Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. That, of course, the mighty Adi Amos. From around 1995, 96, I think, I've always loved that. If you're one of these young kids today that doesn't really remember, you would have been, if you're 18 now, that music probably would have come out right about the time that you were born or something. You may want to check it out. Adi Amos, I believe it's called Songs of Sanctuary, and it is just a wonderful, amazing arrangement. It's called World Music, and it is infectious. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Our country's foreign policy is an absurd shambles right now. Literally nobody respects us. And why would anybody? This is from the Washington Free Beacon via Drudge. And this rolled just about a little less than 2 hours ago by Bill Gertz. Four Russian strategic bombers triggered U.S. air defense systems while conducting practice bombing runs near Alaska this week, with two of the Tupolev Model 95 Bear H aircraft coming within 50 miles of the California coast. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, which is NORAD, confirmed today, quote, "The last time we saw anything similar was 2 years ago on the 4th of July," said Navy Captain Jeff Davis, a NORAD spokesman, speaking to the Free Beacon. Davis said the latest Bear H incursions began Monday around 4:30 in the afternoon Pacific time, when radar detected the four turboprop-powered bombers approaching the U.S. Air Defense Zone near the far western Aleutian Islands. Two U.S. Air Force F-22 jets were scrambled and intercepted the bombers over the Aleutians. After tracking the bombers as they flew eastward, two of the four bears turned around and headed west toward the Russian Far East. The bombers are believed to be based at the Russian strategic base near Anadyr, Russia. The remaining two nuclear-capable bombers then flew southeast and around 9:30 p.m. entered the U.S. Northern Air Defense Zone off the coast of Northern California. Two U.S. F-15 jets were deployed and intercepted the bombers as they eventually flew within 50 miles of the coast before turning around and heading west. A defense official said the four bombers also were supported by two IL-78 aerial refueling tankers that were used for mid-air refueling during the operation this week. The Tu-95, the Tupolev, is a long-range strike aircraft capable of carrying nuclear cruise missiles. Other versions are equipped with intelligence-gathering sensors and electronic warfare gear. It has a range of around 9,400 miles without refueling. Spokesman Davis said the aircraft acted professionally and the bombers appeared to be conducting a training mission. Quote, "They typically do long-range aviation training in the summer, and it is not unusual for them to be more active during this time," he said. Quote, "We assess this was part of training and they did not enter territorial airspace," unquote. Well, that's some cold comfort, isn't it? I'm really glad that they didn't enter our territorial airspace. One will remember in 82 or 83, that the Soviets shot down a 747 That was called Korean Airlines Flight 007 because it had veered off course. It had gotten near the Kamchatka Peninsula. And the Soviet, you know, they shot it down. At the end of the day, they really didn't pay any kind of a penalty for doing that. I suspect that basically if a country has a strong enough military capability and they do things that other countries don't like, they can get away with it. Because, you know, as Detective Ray Curtis once said, who's going to stop them? You? Anyway, 718-305-7176, just over 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We do have talk radio news from Washington, D.C. with Keely Sullivan. And Keely does a very good job. A young person, I spoke with Justin Duckham at Talk Radio News Service today about Keely, and she is a young person entering our industry, and I think that she's going to do very, very well. 718-305-7176 is the number. You know, the way I look at it, Russian airplanes getting near the American coast, that is, you know, no. I would be, if it were me, I would be communicating with them and I would say, you must immediately turn west or we will open fire. I would make sure we were communicating with them. I would record the communication, but I would absolutely warn them, if you do not turn west immediately, we are going to fire on you. And I'm pretty sure that we have a way of firing on them that basically would essentially stall or stop one or two of their engines, so they would have to land in the United States. And once they landed in the United States, you know, they would remain in the United States until the Russians made appropriate arrangements to get them back home, such as promising in writing that they're never going to get within 500 miles of American airspace again. You will recall in the spring of 2001, I think in April, just a couple of months after George W. Bush was inaugurated president of the United States, that an American U.S. Navy P-3 Orion intelligence airplane was flying near Hainan Island, which is that large island off the southeast coast of China. And a communist Chinese airplane came up and bumped it, and the Chinese airplane basically went in the drink. And by bumping the American airplane was damaged, and it had to land on Hainan Island. And, of course, the Chinese acted the way they always have acted. They were bullies, and they demanded an apology and all that kind of stuff. I read about it in Condoleezza Rice's book. Anyway, the news, some business, and your calls all coming up, so don't go away.
Coming to you every hour on the hour. The weather's fine, but there may be a meteor shower.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
From the Talk Radio News Service, I'm Keely Sullivan. After Majority Leader Eric Cantor's shocking defeat in the Virginia primary by Tea Party candidate David Bratt, legislative immigration reform is not likely to pass Congress before their congressional recession this August. According to House Minority Whip Steny Hoyer, comprehensive immigration reform could have reduced the deficit by $900 billion in 20 years. Congressman Tom Price, Vice Chairman of the House Budget Committee, introduced the Pro-Growth Budgeting Act as a defense against excessive government spending. The bill mandates that lawmakers must calculate and be aware of all specific economic consequences before drafting and voting on legislation. Senator Elizabeth Warren's student loan bill that would allow people with student debt to refinance to today's lower interest rates was struck down today on the floor of the Senate by a 56-38 margin. The bill would have allowed almost 40 million Americans to refinance a total of $1.2 trillion. Keely Sullivan, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is hour number 2 of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins, the Wednesday, June 11th, 2014 edition. Thanks a lot for being along. Duke Brooks here. 718-305-7176 is the phone number. And that intro music, of course, Classical Gas by Mason Williams, which is one of my favorite songs to do at karaoke. I just love to do that, and Love is Blue by Paul Muriat, and Telstar by The Ventures. Those are my favorite karaoke songs. 718-305-7176. We have been speaking a little bit about Bo Bergdahl, and my major premise is that Bo Bergdahl is a deserter. My minor premise is that the five guys that we gave up to get this one lowly sergeant back is too high of a price to pay for somebody that I guess ultimately didn't really want to serve his country after all anyway. So my conclusion is that Obama and Kerry and Hagel, the three stooges of foreign policy, really blew it. They have endangered American lives, not only over there, but anywhere in the world where radical Mohammedan jihadists can get a hold of Americans in order to get their friends released from Guantanamo Bay. This is a bad deal. It's a stupid deal. an awful deal, and it was made by awful, stupid people. But people get the government they deserve. Now, that is beginning to come around. Maybe the defeat of the sitting House Majority Leader, Eric Cantor, who, from all accounts and everything that I know about the gentleman, which really, it admittedly, is not an awful lot, he has been in the U.S. Congress for 13 years. He is one of the so-called young guns that you heard so much about 6 or 8 years ago, and they were Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Paul Ryan, and one other, I forget. It'll come to me probably the moment after we sign off. But, he has been there for 13 years, and I have no doubt that at heart he is a conservative. I have no doubt, unfortunately, and this is, I believe, is the reason why he is not going to be a U.S. congressman after January 2nd of next year anymore, is that he is has become, instead of being a Republican citizen legislator, Mr. Eric Cantor is a congressman now. And instead of acting and speaking and voting like a Republican citizen legislator, Mr. Cantor has been voting and acting and speaking like a congressman. And that, I believe, is the reason why he was basically fired by his constituents, which the constituents have every right to do. Is that you, Michael Berryman?
It sure is, Brother Duke.
Hey.
And how are you doing?
Well, I'll tell you what, pal. I've been thinking about you a lot lately, and, of course, I envy you being down there in Texas. Linda and I both wish that we were down there, but I wanted to get some of your thoughts on the Eric Cantor situation.
Well, I figured you'd be talking about that today. And pardon me, my throat's hurting. It's been a long 13 weeks, and last week was brutal at our Republican convention. And I'm going to tie the two together, actually, Duke. Immigration. David Bratt beat him over the head. David Bratt beat Eric Cantor over the head with immigration. We here in Texas beat the establishment over the head with immigration, so much so that we even took control. We had a floor fight on Saturday and took control of our convention and rewrote our platform to the way that the grassroots wanted, as opposed to this notion of let's deal with the 11 or 12 million illegals that are here, and then we'll think about the securing the border. That just can't be done. And I think that's what, Cantor wrapped himself in this notion of soft amnesty, of welcoming these folks here. And what he doesn't apparently get, and what the establishment here in Texas apparently didn't get, is we're not even going to talk visas. That's number two or number three. Before we even discuss that, number one is securing the border and putting in place measurable policies that stops the flow of immigration. It's like having a burning house. You don't start putting the freaking drywall in until you put the fire out.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, the other thing is this, Michael. We hear from so many people, even those that one would refer to them as conservative, saying you can't do anything about the 11 to 12 million illegals that are here now. Well, actually, yes, you can. And if the federal government really wanted them out of here, they wouldn't be here. And there's a way to stop them from coming in. You know, if we have to, we can shut our border. We can send word to every American that lives outside this country, y'all better come back home as soon as possible because we can't be responsible for what happens a month or two from now. And we could get our people home and get them safe. But they don't want to do that because those people in Washington, D.C. just hate America.
Well, they're under the disillusion and under the illusionment that we're going to gain Hispanic votes if we soften up on immigration. And that's a red herring argument. That's a red herring argument. Yeah, that's not going to happen. We're not going to get their votes. What's going to happen if we do not secure the border first by whatever means necessary, and then until the border is secure, every time we find someone that's here illegally, we deport their butt. I'm sorry if that sounds cold. I'm sorry if that displaces a 14-year-old kid that grew up here all his life, and he's a 4.0 student. But that's his parents' fault. You know, if it puts a hardship on the family, it puts a hardship on the family because the parents broke the damn law. It's no different than some father that robs a bank and puts a hardship on his family because he goes to jail.
That's right.
The fact of the matter is if we create a pathway to legality, or worse yet, a pathway to citizenship, without securing the border first, then we are going to subsequently create a magnet for 20 more million illegals to come here. So we won't even discuss what we're going to do with those that are here illegally, other than if they get caught, they get deported. So I would think that would give the establishment plenty of incentive to find a way to get the border secured and get it secured quickly, because then we can have the discussion about HB1 visas or whatever else we're going to discuss.
Well, I think the first thing that needs to happen, we do need to get the illegal aliens that are here out of the country. They need to go home. They need to get out. And one of the things that needs to happen is that if somebody is caught in the country unlawfully, they snuck in, they overstayed their visa, whatever, they are deported. Come in again, they are in prison for 10 years. If they, after the 10 years, they're deported. If they come back in again, a third time, they will be in prison for the rest of their lives. It is the only thing they can do. They've got to be kept out. You sound like you need a rest, pal.
Well, yeah, I'm just poured out. I'm feeling a lot better. Looking forward, I'm going to have a show. My show this Sunday is going to be with a fellow by the name of Jeremy Schwab, who wrote the plank on this reparative therapy plank that's in our platform that has is kind of questionable, but because my throat's so sore right now, I can't really, it would be difficult for me to try to go into explaining about it, but I did want to just call in because I knew you were going to be talking about Eric today, brother.
Oh, yeah. Well, rest up and, rest your pipes and your voice box and everything, and let us speak again very, very soon, pal.
Just put me on the answer right now.
Okay. Thank you, buddy. Thank you for calling, Michael. Oh, sorry about that. Always fun to talk with Michael. He is as involved, Texas GOP politics, as Linda and I are involved in Delaware GOP politics. And Texas is a much larger state than Delaware. I think you know, Delaware geopolitically is the smallest state in the union. Geopolitically, Texas is the largest state. It is not geographically larger than Alaska, as everyone knows, but the combination of its vast size, Texas is larger than France. I mean, it's huge. But a combination of size and population, it's a monster. Speaking of monsters, by the way, we at conservativenationmedia.com are fully optimized for smartphones like the Android and the iPhone. That means you can download our podcasts or you can listen to us live wherever you are and whenever you want to. The same great shows, the same great people, and we're now fully optimized for your smartphone. ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Going to take a break, and then we're going to speak a little bit about Eric Cantor. Civil War history is coming up on the other side of this as well, so don't go away.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more. So I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up, impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things like patience and kindness count. I make weekdays more exciting than weekends, and classrooms feel like anything but. I make things different, which is all I ever hoped for. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Molon LeBay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase, Molon LeVay, which translated means, come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Hi, this is Dave Vance, your host for Inside Tennessee on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Inside Tennessee is moving to Tuesday nights beginning on May 6th. Tune in and join the conversation with some of Tennessee's most conservative and constitutionally minded activists, experts, politicians, and average citizens that are fed up and making a stand. That's Inside Tennessee, Tuesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins.
Okay, welcome back. You are about 20 minutes or so into hour number two of this edition of Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Duke Brooks here. That music, of course, the Ashokan Farewell, means it's time to look into this day in Civil War history. 150 years ago today, June 11th, 1864. That was a Saturday, and this is from the Civil War Day by Day by E.B. Long and Barbara Long. The beaten Federals, struggling back toward Memphis from Bryce's Crossroads, fought rearguard actions at Ripley and Salem, Mississippi. Morgan's Raiders entered Cynthiana, Kentucky, after action at nearby Keller's Bridge. The principal fighting was in Virginia, where Sheridan's cavalry attempted to join Hunter at Charlottesville. Wade Hampton and Fitzhugh Lee went to block his way, and the confused twisted engagement at Trevilian Station, Federal Horse under Custer had some success getting in the Confederate rear, but Hampton recovered. Fitzhugh Lee had less luck and was driven back. By nightfall, Hampton was entrenching across Sheridan's route. The battle was a Federal victory so far, but the achievement was not encouraging. This is really, we're into the summer of 1864, and some people refer to 1864 as the year of big battles because there were some just doozies. I think Cold Harbor was in 1864. I think the Seven Days was in 18. I mean, some of these Civil War battles back then were just utterly amazing bloodbaths, just incredible. Thousands upon thousands of guys killed, and the way pitched battles were fought back then, you look at it and you think now, how on earth could anybody think to fight that way? Good grief. I remember clearly the first time I saw the movie Glory, which came out, in 1989. I'm sure many people remember the movie Glory, directed by Edward Zwick, starring Matthew Broderick, Cary Elwes, Denzel Washington. It was really a very, very well-done film, no question about it. And at the beginning, Robert Gould Shaw is reading a letter that he's written to his mother and essentially narrating it. And we see Union forces moving into position. The music is very, very stirring. Then we see the Confederate forces, and then they are in battle. And on the screen is a legend. It says Antietam Creek, Maryland, September 17th, 1862. And if you know anything at all about the Civil War, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But we see the Union forces marching in formation directly at the Confederates that are lined up behind a fence. Now, you know, when I first saw what was happening at the beginning of the depiction of this battle, I thought to myself, whoa, that's Bloody Lane, what was known as Bloody Lane or the Sunken Road. But then there were some people that I met a year or two later in the Civil War reenactment community when I was a reenactor. It was a wonderful time. I had a great time. What a great hobby. That said to me, no, that was not a depiction of Bloody Lane. That was the initial charge by units like the 7th New York and the 10th Massachusetts Volunteers up the Hagerstown Turnpike out of Sharpsburg on the way towards the creek, the Antietam Creek, and a location known as Burnside's Bridge. Who knows? But in any event, it was done very well. And these guys in the Civil War, they would march in step into combat, and they would be given the order to halt, and then they'd be given the order to load their muskets, which it took about 20 seconds for a good marksman, a good soldier, to load their 57 caliber Enfield rifled musket, cap and ball, percussion cap to fire it that was filled with fulminative mercury. You had a cartridge, which was basically a tube of paper filled with black powder, and there was a lead ball that was tied onto one end. I mean, it was a difficult thing to do, and especially if you're under fire, and guys would be standing there loading their rifles at the from the muzzle, and some enemy soldier on the other side, 50, 60 yards away, not even aware of what's going on, just a soldier there trying to load his musket so he could fire again, one shot at a time, that was it. And all of a sudden, boom, he's just no longer alive. He's no longer there. But, I mean, it was just, what a blood. And the men that fought that war, they did so with honor. Just amazing. And they knew that that's what it was. And they would go in and they would fight like that. Unbelievable. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. As far as Eric Cantor is concerned, let's look at a couple of factors. Number one, I don't know about you, but I guess I have spent the last, 40 years or so being very, very discouraged by the fact that once a person is elected to Congress, they pretty much get to stay there for their entire lives. I am hoping, against all hope, I'm with my fingers crossed, I am just so much hoping that this year, this election, which is coming up in just a little less than 5 months in November, that, number one, the Republicans expand their control of the House of Representatives, that they gain control of the U.S. Senate, and that every Republican that is in there now, with maybe one or two exceptions, is replaced with other Republicans, and the majority of the Democrats, if not all of them, are thrown out, and Republicans come in to take their place. That's what I hope happens. And I hope that the president is completely marginalized. I hope that the president, you know, the president violated the law. I mean, everyone is saying the same thing, that the president violated the law when he decided to free the five Taliban senior commanders at Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where they're being held. I think there's 180 people there, something like that. And they're all bad guys, every one of them. They're all bad guys. We didn't just go over there and arbitrarily scoop up people that were walking down the street. These are all very, very serious bad guys. Some of them have one of the guys that was that we had and that we handed back over to the Taliban. There is a picture of him kneeling or standing behind seven severed heads that he had apparently decapitated seven people. And we're going to turn that guy back? We're going to let him go back for a guy like Bo Bergdahl, who is, you know, really apparently as insignificant as a person can get in the vast scheme of things? And this is what our government thinks is acceptable, but I digress. The president violated the law by not notifying the Congress, not giving them 30 days notice. Now, Joe Trippi pointed out that there had been newspaper articles more than 2 months ago that this was going to happen. But I don't think that that will suffice for actual notice, the kind of notice that is required of the U.S. Congress to provide. I just don't think that it is. I don't think that it is. We are now in the final 30 minutes of this episode of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. One of the worst things that can possibly happen to you as an American in this day and age is to be a victim of identity theft. If it does happen to you, and I hope it doesn't, it could take you months or even longer to recover from it if you can recover at all. So don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance and sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock protects your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There really is nothing that comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com. Then click on the LifeLock banner. You will be very glad that you did. You will be glad that you hung out past this brief break that we're about to take. Don't go away.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of a dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
Want to help those affected by Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines? To donate, visit philippinesrelief.adcouncil.org. That's philippinesrelief.adcouncil.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Talking to myself and feeling old. Sometimes I'd like to quit. Nothing ever seems to fit. Hanging around. Nothing to do but frown.
All right, welcome back. This is the beginning sort of the home stretch of this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. That, of course, the immortal Karen Carpenter. Rainy days and Mondays. It is not a Monday. It is a Wednesday, June 11th, to be precise, although it was kind of a rainy day here in southern Delaware today. That's all right. I guess we need the rain. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. This is Ann Coulter's take on the loss by Eric Cantor yesterday. This comes via Drudge. You know, I have met Ann Coulter in person one time. Ann is about 6'3", and she weighs about 43 pounds. I mean, it's, you know, obviously she's a brilliant intellect, an attorney, very successful, et cetera, but, you know, I've got to be honest with you, the girl just is unbelievably skinny. It's, but anyway, I digress. Ann Coulter writes, Cantor loses by 11 million voters. Economics professor Dave Brat crushed House Majority Leader Eric Cantor in the Republican primary on Tuesday night in a campaign that was mostly about Cantor supporting amnesty for 11 million illegal aliens. This marks the first time a U.S. House Majority Leader has ever lost a primary election. His crushing defeat reinforces a central point. Whenever the voters know an election is about immigration, they will always vote against more immigration, especially amnesty. Cantor spent more than $5 million on his campaign. Bratt spent less than $150,000. But Bratt made the election about Cantor's support for amnesty, so he won. The pro-amnesty crowd, that is everyone except the American people, promptly lost its collective mind. The amnesty shills went on the attack, insisting that Cantor's historic defeat had nothing to do with amnesty. Bratt's triumph was touted as simply a victory for the, quote, Tea Party, unquote. Of course, these are the same people who also try to persuade us that amnesty isn't amnesty. Illegal aliens aren't illegal aliens, they're undocumented workers, and that there are 30 million jobs Americans won't do at any price. In fact, however, the Tea Party had nothing to do with Bratt's victory. Only the small local Tea Party groups stand for anything anymore, but they're as different from the media-recognized Tea Party as lay Catholics are from the Catholic bishops. Okay, touche. National Tea Party groups did not contribute dime number one to Bratt, not Freedom Works, not Club for Growth, not the Tea Party Express, not Tea Party Patriots. They were too busy denouncing Senator Mitch McConnell, who has consistently voted against amnesty. As I have been warning you, excuse me, the big National Tea Party groups are mostly shysters and con men raising money for their own self-aggrandizement. Parenthetically, Ann Coulter writes, today, they're blast-faxing media availability notices to television networks claiming credit for Bratt's victory. The Tea Party Express, for example, quote, represents the views of ordinary Americans by supporting Chamber of Commerce demands for cheap labor through amnesty. As Eric Hoffer said, quote, every great cause begins as a movement, becomes a business, and eventually degenerates into a racket, unquote. Very interesting. Okay, yeah. Nevertheless, the claim that Bratt's victory was a win for the Tea Party is everywhere, pushed with suspicious insistence by people who do not usually wish the Republican Party well. Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for example, said, tonight's result in Virginia settles the debate once and for all. The Tea Party has taken control of the Republican Party, period, unquote. Liberals apparently want Bratt's victory to be seen as a win for the Tea Party and not a defeat for amnesty. At least acknowledging the obvious, Bratt's victory was about amnesty. New York's Senator Chuck Schumer said, quote, Cantor's defeat does not change the fundamental fact that Republicans will become a minority party if they don't address our broken immigration system, unquote. And if anyone has the Republican Party's best interests at heart, it's got to be Chuck Schumer. Ann Coulter is the greatest. She really is a wonderful writer. In Schumer's harangue, Schumer's harangue enough to convince the bubbleheads in the GOP to say, let's take it to the Democrats on this issue? They can start by asking Schumer, how come we don't get to have the same immigration policy that Israel does, unquote. I like Israel's immigration policy, Ann Coulter writes. Instant, unapologetic, unsentimental deportation of illegal aliens. Schumer obviously supports that policy, too. It's one of many Israeli policies we might try here at home if only Schumer would let us. Could it be that Schumer cares more about the survival of Israel than he does about the survival of the Republican Party? On Fox News, Mark Thiessen assured viewers that Bratt's victory was not about amnesty at all, what was an expression of the same anti-establishment sentiment we've seen elsewhere this year. He specifically cited Ben Sasse's victory in the Nebraska Senate GOP primary and Chris McDaniel's forcing incumbent Senator Thad Cochran into a runoff in Mississippi. Let's take those. One, Ben Sasse was running for an open seat. There was no establishment Republican to defeat. Two, McDaniel has made his opposition to amnesty the centerpiece of his campaign. We're 0 for 2 so far. What else you got? There were, in fact, a couple of Tea Party challenges this year to so-called establishment Republican incumbents, such as McConnell and John Cornyn. They both voted against the Schumer-Rubio amnesty. They both won. That's 0 for 4. Senator Lindsey Graham's win last night is hardly a counterexample. His $8 million war chest discouraged serious challengers. He ended up with 6 opponents, and as a result, that race attracted no national anti-amnesty attention. Graham sure didn't stress his support for amnesty during the campaign. Parenthetically, Ann Coulter writes, he's saving that as a surprise. Fox News' Carl Cameron blamed Cantor's loss on the rain. Quote, it's worth noting that the weather was foul here yesterday and today as well, so some of it may have been nature helping out David Bratt, unquote. Similarly, the New Yorker explained Cantor's loss by saying, low turnout undoubtedly played a role. Well, what these people are doing is they are talking about turnout and weather as if this were a general election. It was instead only a primary election. The United States is still the freest country on this earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com is not about to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalisky, is leading that charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalisky, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And where the phone number is 718-305-7176. Duke Brooks here. We've got about 16 minutes left in this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. I have been reading from Ann Coulter's column today. 65,000 ballots were cast in the counter-Bratt contest. That is not a large turnout for a congressional primary election. It's gigantic. In Cantor's 2012 primary, 47,000 people voted. In the only other two congressional primaries in Virginia on Tuesday, the day with all that rain, 39,000 people voted in one and 17,400 in the other. Every excuse in the book is being trotted out to claim this election was about anything but amnesty. Cantor was, quote, arrogant. He was out of touch. Democrats crossed over to vote for Bratt. Cantor was overconfident. Also, the sun was in his eyes. It's all the same boilerplate used to rationalize any election loss. Let's take one. Overconfident? Are you kidding me? Cantor spent more than $5 million on a congressional primary, Ann Coulter writes. Cantor's idiotic statements about amnesty lit up talk radio, were denounced daily on major websites like Breitbart, and were the dominant theme of Bratt's campaign, especially in the last few months. The influential CouseFiles.com became a one-man Eric Cantor rapid response team on amnesty. CouseFiles, K-A-U-S-F-I-L-E-S.com. I have no idea what that is. I I don't know. I'd never heard of it. But Anne is calling it influential. I'm presuming that there's a heavy dose of sarcasm there. Pratt didn't just win. He walloped Cantor 55.5% to 44.5%. Still not convinced Pratt's victory was about amnesty? Then tell me why the New York Times ran this headline on Wednesday. Quote, why did Cantor lose? Not easy to explain, unquote. Ann Coulter is a brilliant writer, no question about it. I think she's terrific, and the left, boy, do they hate her. They hate Ann Coulter more than anything imaginable. Really despise Ann Coulter because she argues well, and she presents facts in a very in a way that could be referred to as truth well told. There's really no other way to describe it. Anyway, we've got about 13 minutes left, and a little over 2 minutes of those are going to be taken up with this break that is about to happen. Stay right where you are. More coming up, maybe a little hangar flying, and your calls on the other side, so don't go away.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by feedthepig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I opened a 401k.
So you're giving up, just like that?
Giving up on what?
I'm getting an inheritance from a distant relative.
Don't you think if there were a billionaire in the family, we'd know about it by now?
Listen to me. We are one phone call away from riding horses on our own private polo ground. One call from christening yachts, having a butler, using summer as a verb.
How do you figure?
Look, everyone's got a rich uncle somewhere. It's statistics. So the best thing you can do is just prepare for the inevitable.
Right. Which is why I thought maybe it would be smart to take control of my finances. You know, start using a budget, get out of debt, set some retirement goals.
Budgets? Debt? You watch your mouth. Retirement shouldn't be a goal for us. It should be a way of life.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
That is Bernard Herrmann's brilliant theme from the Alfred Hitchcock film North by Northwest, the sound of escaping gas that you may have heard in the background a moment or two earlier is something that you must ignore. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. About 10 and a half minutes to go in this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Duke Brooks here. The number is 718-305-7176. Now then, last week I was fortunate on the air twice on Wednesday and Friday talking about major battles, engagements of World War II. Midway, we discussed on Wednesday, and D-Day, we discussed on Friday. D-Day, of course, the single largest military undertaking in modern human history. I mean, just the more I read about it, the more I realize that the logistics of putting it together, all of the things that had to be done in order to make sure that it worked, we had you know, the Germans were fairly good at intelligence gathering, but not all that good. The Germans, from what I have read, the guy that ran military intelligence for Hitler was this admiral, this dude whose name was Canaris. And he was just, you know, he was okay, but apparently they were kind of like sort of easily fooled by Allied stuff. Now, granted, Operation Mincemeat, which was part of Operation Fortitude, that was the one that many people know from a film called The Man Who Never Was. And in this case, a corpse, a body, was set up with a false identity. It was a briefcase was handcuffed to the corpse's wrist. The corpse was put into the torpedo tube of a submarine, was fired off the coast of Spain and Portugal into the Iberian Peninsula in such a way that there's no question it was going to be picked up. The Spaniards at that time were technically neutral, but their sympathies for Germany were widely and well and truly known. Almost everybody understood that. So that corpse, which had been given the false identity of somebody named William Martin, and they did everything. They typed up letters. They had put a notice in the newspaper that Captain or a commander, Lieutenant Commander William Martin had been killed in a sinking of a ship. And, you know, just they did everything to get the Germans to buy this. And they had letters and they had experts that had, once the corpse and the letters, the briefcase and everything were returned to the British consulate in Madrid or wherever it was, Barcelona, I don't know, Lisbon. They examined and they found out that the letters had been opened, and there's a famous scene in the movie called The Man Who Never Was, in which they, I think it's the actor Kenneth Moore, British actor from the 50s, is asking this scientist whether or not they wanted to see whether the letters had been opened or read. And he asks the scientist in the white lab coat, you know, well, have these been read? And the scientist starts, he goes into this long-winded explanation about how you can't tell whether they've been read. And then Kenneth Moore says, well, had they been opened? And the scientist says, oh, well, yes, indeed. Oh, absolutely, they've been opened. Unbelievable. We did so many things to make sure that the Germans would think that the Normandy invasion was a diversionary invasion, and as a result, the Germans kept huge swaths of their military, their army. And the Germans had units like the 3rd Waffen SS Panzer, the 7th Panzer Grenadiers. I mean, they had, you know, all these really very competent, capable units. And Hitler had been told at some point, I guess in late May, by Admiral Canaris, that there was likely to be an invasion somewhere near the Cotentin Peninsula of Normandy, but that invasion would be a feint. That would be a diversionary invasion. The real invasion was going to take place to the northeast at the Calais Pass, the Pas de Calais, which is the narrowest portion of the English Channel. And as a result, when the Allies came ashore, on the morning of June 6th, and Allied paratroopers had landed behind German lines starting at midnight the night before. The people in Berlin and Hitler and all of his buddies there, they thought that this was a fake operation. They did not think that this was going to be the real thing. So they kept all their very serious armor and infantry, engineer battalions, they kept all of those in reserve at Calais. And they waited for the real invasion to take place there. And they waited. And they waited. And no one was willing to wake up Hitler on the morning of June 6th. Rommel was in Berlin. It was famously, it was his wife's birthday, June 6th. So he was not there. The Allies, I think the United States on D-Day lost about 4,000 guys. The Germans only lost about 1,100. The Germans were dug in, and we had some pretty serious difficulties. We had some serious issues with paratroopers and people getting off the landing craft, the Higgins boats and things. You know, an operation like that is very huge. It's very, very difficult to do. And on top of it, obviously, it was deadly, lethal, mortal combat to begin with. So what did you expect, you know? 718-305-7176 is the number. About 2 minutes left for this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Christian is saying to me, "Was a good show tonight." Thank you very much, Christian. I appreciate it. And I look forward to speaking with him next Wednesday, as usual. Next Wednesday, we are likely going to be discussing, at least probably for the first half of the program, the Marianas turkey shoot. This was pretty much the end of the Japanese Navy in World War II. After that, I mean, Japan, they were just getting... You know, it's one thing to get your butt kicked, and the Japanese got their butt kicked. The reason they really got it kicked is that they were beaten, but they didn't know that they were beaten, or they wouldn't acknowledge that they were beaten, but they were beaten. Absolutely no question about it. They were really beaten, I think, really by the second week in April of 1945, and the war went on, actual combat went on, another 5 months after that. They would not give up. What are you going to do? You know, I mean, we tried to make it clear to them, look, you guys, and we were firebombing Tokyo and Nagoya, and they're just leveling factories and airfields and everything. And finally, the nuclear bombs came along, and President Truman was like, oh, wow, really? That's what we've got? Well, yeah, let's use them. We want to end this war. That's the deal. Anyway, I hope that you have a wonderful week. Of course, pay attention to the news. There will be a quiz next week. Absolutely. And I do look forward to seeing you next week. I hope that you have a wonderful week and have a wonderful summer weekend. Thanks for being along.